ring if you're ready to care.
What is up, everybody? It is your boy, We Too Deep, and we are back with another episode of the Slapping Meat Community Show. And we got, for the first time in a while, we got some wrestling to talk about, something that I'm actually really excited about. Just sort of preview what we're going over in this episode. We're going to go over Bound for Glory. But I'm also... I made the IWC a little angry over the weekend. And I want to break that down and discuss that. And so we'll go over that. We'll go over week six of the NFL that we just finished last night. And we'll go over what's going on here, some big things as we're approaching the November 4th trade deadline. We'll talk about the New England Patriots and Patriots Corner like we always talk about. I'll give my deep five. We'll make predictions for week seven. And then we got some questions from the Discord, the same kind of format before... We go into that, though. I'm going to go ahead and get all of the sort of housekeeping promotion stuff out of the way right now at the beginning. So first off, the link in the description, 20% off clear protein powder. I'm getting used to it. The smell, like I mentioned in my initial review, the smell was a little off-putting. I'm just going to be completely honest. But a lot of protein powders have a weird smell. I'm assuming that... I'm going to be completely honest. I'm a little bit confused why this one has a more like bacteria-type smell. With it being sugar-free, there shouldn't be that type of, you know, bacteria-type smell. Like... I don't know if you guys understand science, but a lot of, like, say, for example, like, if you go to an AEW show and you smell all the body odors because they don't clean themselves and the bacteria is producing gas as the bacteria, for lack of better words, farts on them, because that's what bacteria does. The bacteria is a living thing. It eats food sources and it has to release waste. And the body odor smell you smell at an AEW show, That's just the farts of bacteria, now that I grossed everyone out. But, anyway, I don't know where I was going with that. Anyway, 20% off clear protein powder. It tastes good. Once you get past the smell... And I'm real brutally honest when it comes to things like this. But anyway, clearprotein.com, that's K-L-E-A-R, protein.com/discount/slappingmeat. That's 20% off. Don't forget to join the Discord, link in the description. That's where you can go, comment on the product, what you like about it. Give ideas of things, talk about just, you know, it's a chill zone, right? And I just got done doing an episode over, you know, on Friday that I typically don't do. Because of something that happened in the Discord on Friday, and as Friday went along, some things got cleaned up. The Discord, as much as I appreciate the Beyond the Junkyard guys... And I wish them all the best. They are my best friend and my brother, so I wish them all the best. I do, they have decided to go and build their own Discord community, which is perfectly fine. You can go support them. I'm all about community, but what was ending up happening was I want a chill atmosphere. You can say whatever you want as long as you keep the atmosphere chill. And when you take wrestling a little bit too serious, I think it ruins that atmosphere that I wanted to create in my community. So, you know, they agreed to go form their own, and I wish them all the best. But our Discord, the We Too Deep Entertainment Discord, is still at the same link that's in the description. Come join a chill place to talk about life, sports, wrestling, whatever it is, you know. We just want to have a fun time, have a chill place to talk as friends. Finally, if you're listening on audio, I have the YouTube link on there. This is important. I'm considering, I haven't decided yet, and I would love your input on this. I'm considering possibly, as part of We Too Deep Entertainment, doing, I know one of the popular things that happen on you, that you can do on YouTube is like music video reviews or reviews of different videos, and I'm all for doing that. If it creates a type of content, I wouldn't be able to do it all the time, and it wouldn't be like a daily upload like some of these channels do. But if that's something you all are interested in, sort of like reaction type videos, the first thing that I'll need is you guys to send me videos, and it could be literally on anything. But let me know if that's something you guys would be interested in. If I did like reaction type videos to give some content for the YouTube that's a little bit, you know, different than just the podcast. Let me know if that's something you guys would be interested in. And then finally, this one's going to be a little bit odd. But I'm going to go ahead and self-promote. Over the last week or so, I have officially become a Amazon published, I don't want to say author. So I'm going to explain sort of what is going on. So there, if you go on Amazon, and I'm going to put the link in the description that you could find it, on Kindle or paperback copy. Again, if you want to read it, it's nothing, you know, that, you know, has to be done, but something, a way you could support. I mean, again, I'm a fan of just content and We Too Deep Entertainment taking it past just, you know, eventually I want that to be my job, to be completely honest with you. And so I want a place where content gets created, whether it's storytelling, whether it's podcasts, whether, you know, podcasts of various forms. That's something that I want to grow. And so I decided to go into storytelling, and this story that I told, it's titled When Faith Finds You. And it's essentially it's what I wanted to create was a simple story. So take like, so I'm a big fan of like old Western type movies, but I'm also like a big fan of like romantic style stories. I think if you take like sort of your lifetime Hallmark style movie, they have a winning formula in those movies. They're all the same. They're all told exactly the same, with just the characters that are different. And essentially what I did was, okay, we're going to tell a story. And as much as their story, because those type of movies, Lifetime movies, annoy the hell out of me, even though I watch them. They're the cheesiest movies in the world, mostly because of the acting is just awful. But what I envisioned in this was a scenario where, let's tell something like this. And it's also a thing for me where a lot of the story that I ended up telling here is a opportunity to share, in a way, my worldview. I find a problem with Christian movies, Christian books, where they become a little bit corny and cheesy, and they're not realistic. This was a very realistic story, where not only do I want to create content that's good and just create content, but I want to create content that pushes my worldview forward. Because, and I'm to be honest, I'm the type of Christian, you don't really see a lot of these now, but more coming out with the events that have happened with Charlie Kirk. By the way, happy birthday. Today is Charlie Kirk's birthday. Happy birthday from heaven. The world misses you. And we continue to mourn with his family. What we're seeing through that, though, is a lot more people are coming out and are being, you know, Christians are coming out and saying, we're going to take back this culture that we should have never released to secular society. We're taking that back. And it used to be that way, that in culture, there was a strong Christian culture in the culture, and they made movies and they made music and they made content. And I want to be a part of that. I'll say this. It's a very, very simple story. Don't expect, you know, the greatest writing, the greatest story. It's very simple, right? But I believe, you know, it's raw, it's real. I think it's relevant to a lot of things, you know, the things that I want to, participate, everything that I make, I want to be real, raw, and relevant, right? And I'm not a big fan of reading fiction, but this really got me interested in it and just taking different things, and I'm really wasting a lot of time right here. But anyway, it's called When Faith Finds You, link in the description, if you all want to participate in that. And by that, the formatting, I'll just be honest with you, right? So when I say that it's Amazon published, so Amazon, you're allowed to self-publish without going through all the hoops of paying for an editor and paying for all of this other stuff. And with that being said, though, I can only sell on Amazon because I don't have I think it's called an ISBN number. I don't have one of those. I'm not going to pay for one of those. I'm content just selling this on Amazon. I mean, it's literally the world could buy this. So I'm not trying to get it into bookstores or anything like that. But that is essentially, I've been working on this. Just to preface, the reason I said I don't call myself an author, but more, what I see myself is a director. And so there's a difference, right? So an author of a script is the one who writes it, the sort of the screenwriter, right? And I always think of things in terms of movies because I prefer movies over books. But the director oftentimes doesn't write the script, but they're handed a script and given the free ability to change that around, right? And so with this process, I'm not the best when it comes to putting ideas on paper. And so I'll preface this. The physical putting words down wasn't done by me. I did use AI, but before you throw back, oh, that means you didn't do anything. No. I need you to understand. I spent literally days, because I don't pay for ChatGPT to where I can just go all in. So I spent literally days programming, saying this is what I want the characters to be, look like. I shaped the character. I prompted them to say this is what the character arc is. Here's the story. Here's the, let's go, let's do this one chapter at a time. And right, and here's what I want chapter one to be. Here's what I want chapter two to be. Right at this point is where I want the big climactic finish, you know, at this point, not at this point. You know, a chapter would be written, I would read through it, and I would say, this point doesn't make much sense when you go back to this past chapter because of this, that, right? And so, just like my prefaces, so I'm just going to read the preface from the book that I did put in here. This book is written in collaboration with artificial intelligence, but make no mistake, the ideas, the stories, the characters, they are entirely mine. I imagined the world, created the people, and shaped the journey. AI did not create, it only assisted. It helped me find words, organize the scenes, and explore possibilities I could then refine. Think of it as a brush in the hand of a painter. I chose the colors, I directed the strokes, and I painted the picture. I call myself not an author, but a director. My vision drives the story, but AI gave it life and language. This book is the product of imagination, guided by human creativity, powered by technology. I know there's a lot of people who be like, oh, this is what we're worried about, AI. No. Look, guys, I think this is a great tool. I think it's a great tool to... now, obviously, it would be kind of shady if I just told AI to write a story. They could do whatever they want. I copied and pasted it and sold it as my own. Legally, I could do that, though. I looked up the laws on this. Legally, I could do that because AI isn't protected by copyright. But that's not what happened here, right? So I'll be honest. What happened, again, like I said, I directed everything that happened in this. It was all my ideas, the characters, everything about the story, I directed. And so I just want to get that out of the way. As you guys know that I think when it comes to people like me who have issues putting creative ideas onto paper, AI is a beautiful tool to help with that. I think it's a beautiful tool. You know, the cover art was generated by AI. I didn't have to pay an editor or a cover artist hundreds of dollars to create that. I got it for free. I think AI is a wonderful tool that helps the creative mind, and the only people who are going to be upset with that are those that stand to lose money because of it. And so that's my view on that, that I don't think AI is going to take over. This is a whole other podcast idea, and we could maybe go down. This is a community show. We could talk about this. I don't think AI is going to take over. Right, a lot of people fear that AI is going to take jobs from the normal people, and I don't have that fear with AI. I just don't. I think the jobs AI will take over will be your creative jobs, where typically your bookmaking and your story writing and your content creation and your movie making were gatekept. Into you had to have a degree, you had to have experience, you had to have contacts in Hollywood, you had to put in the work. And now what's going to happen in the not so far future, in the near future, I see this happening where AI is going to be so good that you can actually create. Now you would have to pay money to do this and subscribe, because these AI companies are going to want money from it. But imagine paying $100 a month and being able to create Hollywood-level A-tier movies for $100 a month. Say it takes you 6 months to direct it. You paid $600, right? Where budgets for movies like that, I mean, The Rock just spent $50 million on a movie that only turned up like $18 million on the box office. Now imagine me as a creative mind being able to put into a computer, hey, I want to make this movie. Here are the characters that are in my mind. Here's the descriptions of the characters of the scene. Here's the story arc. Here's what I want to happen. Can you make this for me? And for, let's say it takes 6 months of creating and shaping and prompting and editing, and for $600... you created an A-tier movie that can then go to theaters and right. I don't see an issue with that. I personally don't. Imagine books being printed that don't require editing, from editors and big, wouldn't require, you know, big publishing companies. I mean, you would still need them, but again, self-publishing is kind of easy on Amazon if you're just fine just selling on Amazon. Will jobs disappear as the market? But again, I don't think a lot of people are scared the factory jobs or the retail jobs and all of that will be taken away. I don't think that will happen because it'll be far too expensive to maintain an AI system in retail. Especially seeing that you'll still need human beings to work the kiosk when they break. And so I think I don't think the customer service jobs are going to be pushed out with AI. I think what's going to change is your musicians, your movie makers, your artistic jobs, right? Those are your artsy jobs are going to be removed by AI. And we're already sort of seeing that in and of itself. And I don't have an issue with that, to be honest. And so, again, AI is a tool. I don't believe you should use it to replace human creativity, but I do think it could be a tool to expand human creativity. And so that's exactly what I'm trying to prove with this book here, is that this story, my ideas, my writing, I actually edited some of it and said, can you do this instead of this, right? And so, I mean, it literally took me a week to write it, editing and changing it. Like, it was a fun process. And so, there's that again, link in the description. But now that we wasted 20 minutes doing all that fun stuff, let's go into wrestling. Let's go in the ropes. I want to give my thoughts on Bound for Glory. But what about Crown Jewel? I didn't watch Crown Jewel. One, it was at 8 in the morning, and I'm not getting up for that, especially since I was on the way to work when it started. But two, I'm not going to pay to watch what you got. I think it was cool to see that Cena and AJ Styles paid a lot of homage to a lot of different people. Frankie Kazarian, Sting, different people throughout both of their careers and their finish. That was fun. That was cool. But again, Crown Jewel, and what a lot of these foreign shows have just become, are house shows with PLE production. And so I just, especially something like Crown Jewel, where nothing's really on the line here, I just really didn't care. But Bound for Glory was on Sunday, and I did care about this. And we had, I'll be honest, I'm not going to call this the greatest wrestling show of the year. I don't think it's that. But I do think it had some cool moments. We start, now I didn't watch the pre-show, but I do know that the Inspiration, or if you were a WWE fan, the Iconics retained the tag team titles. I know that the Beautiful People and Mickie James were inducted into the Hall of Fame, which is awesome. And so that's the pre-show, but we start this with Macklin versus Kazarian. And Macklin wins in front of his mama, and that was fun. It was fun seeing that. Again, it was just a fun moment. Good match to start the show. It wasn't great, but it was a good little match to start the show. Not really a lot of big moments in that match, but I think personally for me, I think it was cool that Macklin got to do an entrance with the Marines, and that's fun, and something to me that I appreciate that TNA allowed that to happen. We then had, I think the next match, I'm going to go out of order a little bit. I'm just going to start naming matches. We had the Call Your Shot gauntlet match, which essentially, if you don't know how the rules are, it's essentially a Royal Rumble, and then once you get to the final two, it becomes a one-on-one singles match. Pin or submission is how you get the fall, right? And so, a little bit of fun. Santino gets involved. He has his little fun moment, gets eliminated in like 0.2 seconds, playing on his Rumble appearance, right? That was a little fun nostalgia pop. The Hometown Man, I think, might be the greatest character in wrestling right now. That's sort of like the comedy character. For those who don't know what Hometown Man is, essentially, it's the name's the name explains it. Whatever town you're in is his hometown, right? And so he just comes out. He's the natural baby face in every match he's in, right? This time he comes out with Wally, the big green monster, the Red Sox mascot, which I thoroughly enjoyed because the Red Sox are my team. Again, it's just fun. It was just a fun match. Now, it ended pretty, I'm just going to be honest with you, it was a pretty crap ending. I'm not the biggest fan of Nemeth and Kazarian holding the cup together. It'll make for an interesting type story. I don't know where it's going, but I'm a little bit intrigued. But I think this would have been better to create a new star, someone like. Honestly, someone like a Danny Luna to get into the world title picture, or someone like Jake something could have benefited from this, or if you have like some younger talent involved, like in the company, I think it would have been cool to have that, rather than putting it on Nick Nemeth and Kazarian with the double pin and all of that. It is what it is. With that being said, I enjoyed the match itself. It had its moments, right? I was kind of expecting some NXT stars, and we didn't get that. So that's a cool thing, right? We then have Tessa and Gia Miller, and again, the match wasn't memorable. Tessa, again, natural heel. She's great. I love Tessa, right? Gia Miller. Oh, man. Gia Miller has a new favorite fan, and that is We Too Deep. I already liked her. I thought she was cute as a commentator. She a little cheeked up. But she did a lot better than I thought she would do. I was like, oh, this is just going to be one of them commentators get in the ring. I didn't realize she had a wrestling background and actually trained at High Spots here in Charlotte where I live. I know George South. I've met him a couple times. Dude, still kicking and wrestling on a monthly basis, doing hardcore matches too. Like I've seen him do like war game style match, like hardcore indie type matches at like 70, 80 years old. This dude's crazy. I know Tessa is from the area and went to. I didn't realize Gia Miller did. So to have that play into the story was cool to have. Gia's mother or family there. I don't think they played into it as much as they could have, but again, you sort of had that with Santana and with Macklin. That was sort of like the common thread among a lot of these matches where their families were ringside. And so you couldn't really use this to play into that match because it would then take away from probably, you know, what was coming with Santana, right? But yeah, that was a fun match. We had, quite honestly, what I might consider. Oh, I remember a match that I missed. We had Hardcore War between Mustafa Ali and his team. I can't think of the gimmick or the faction's name right now. But it's John Skyler, Mustafa Ali, Tasha Steeles, I can't think of the other dude's name right now. Let me pull this up real quick, because it's going to annoy me if I don't know the name. Oh, it's called Order 4. Mustafa Ali, Tasha Steeles, Jason Hotch, John Schuyler, and a new guy named Special Agent Zero versus the system, which is Moose, Alicia Edwards, Brian Myers, Eddie Edwards, and JDC for WWE fans. That is Fandango. And an intergender match known as Hardcore War. So I didn't talk about this with the Gauntlet, but because I wanted to discuss it here. You cannot convince me that intergender matches are a good thing for wrestling. Those two matches sort of put me off. Great matches, but I get put off a little bit by the intergender aspect, right? For two reasons. One, let's take this match. You have Special Agent Zero. This dude's yoked. This dude's jacked, right? He has a good wrestling look, by the way. Not the best name, but he has a good look. And he's powerful and all that, right? You have him in the ring against someone like Alicia Edwards. Are you literally going to believe that Alicia Edwards could beat this dude? Right? But then on the other side, if he hits her in the real world, in the world not of the IWC wrestling fans that it's right that try to pretend like it's all okay because it's wrestling and they train together. Okay, but in the real world, if you're trying to present your product to a national brand, like say an NBC Universal to get a TV deal, and they watch the show and they say, well, why is this big guy beating up this girl? That's not the type of product we want to display to our fans that aren't wrestling fans. And the nerds in the IWC don't think about that. They just say, well, it made for a good spot. Okay, but the spot doesn't matter if the rest of the world thinks that you're promoting domestic abuse. Right? So you throw me off when you have, you know, men and women. It was something me and Highlander were talking in the Discord. There's no reason why you couldn't do a 20-man gauntlet for the men and a 20-woman gauntlet. You have access to NXT's roster for the women, because there isn't a lot of TNA women, and I understand that. But you have access to NXT's locker room. You could easily have filled a 20-woman gauntlet match and had two different matches there. Leon Slater, Javon Evans. What a banger. Again, crappy ending, and we'll talk about that. Crappy ending. But what a banger. This went for about 20-something minutes. 23 minutes exactly that it went. And I didn't realize there was a 20-minute time limit, and so it went to time limit at 20 minutes. They restarted it, gave him 5 more minutes, and then Dark State came out. Now, again, me and Highlander were talking about this, and we were saying, why would you not have Dark State not come out during the 10-person intergender hardcore war no DQ match? Because that match was being booked as who's like the best faction in TNA. Why would you not have a faction and Dark State come in, attack them? It's no DQ, so it doesn't affect the match at all. They can attack, right? And then, right, why would you have them attack Leon Slater and Javon Evans, right? Now, maybe answers get answered at NXT as I'm recording this. But, yeah, I was not a big fan that match. But reading into it, it appears they're going to get a rematch at Halloween Havoc. And if that's the case, then we're going to get another banger between Javon and Leon Slater on the NXT PLE, right? And ultimately, with WWE having some sort of creative control, which we all knew would happen, right? That's how partnerships work. Both sides get a say in how their stars look. And Javon Evans is the guy they're trying to build as the future of the NXT, right? And so, and then Leon Slater is the future, who will be a WWE superstar soon, I can see. And so, yeah, I actually don't mind this ending in no contest if we're getting a rematch at Halloween Havoc, because you then can right, maybe turn it into no DQ, maybe turn it into something where Dark State is, you know, banned from ringside or whatever, and turn it into something like that. But Halloween Havoc, having that as a match, is a big match. We had the Hardys versus the Dudleys, and we had a Spike reunion, which no doubt popped me just a little bit, because Spike was one of my favorites growing up. Now, I've been openly honest that I don't think that the Hardys or the Dudleys are the greatest tag team of all time. That's just personal preference. I like more of the slower, more what I call Southern style tag teams, you know, the Four Horsemen, the Crocker type, you know, someone like FTR, right? If FTR were to shut their mouths, I would appreciate them a lot more. But they're such whiny douchebags that it's really hard to cheer for them. You know, the no fist, or no flips, just fist type gimmick that FTR played in WWE as the Revival, right? That's my type of tag team. I'm not saying I don't like the flips. I think New Day and the Usos are the top two teams in all of history, just because of longevity and gimmick and creativity and championships. But I think I appreciate teams like the Four Horsemen and Evolution and stuff like that, right? But with that being said, I can't take away the importance of the Hardys and the Dudleys to pro wrestling, right? I can say you're not my favorite and still give them respect and saying this nostalgia right here. I'm openly on the record saying I don't like nostalgia booking. With that being said, this is how a retirement match, and I'm assuming it's a retirement match for the Dudleys based on the ending, this is how it happens. Nostalgia is good when it's for one night only. The nostalgia booking I don't like is when you do something like Triple H does a lot, where he nostalgia books someone for stories for 2-3 months, and it removes, you know, a place on the card for someone they're building. Because they got to get that nostalgia push. You know, a Goldberg, a Nikki Bella, a Becky Lynch of this summer, right? This summer really struggled because they did a lot of nostalgia booking. The year as a whole, because they were booking for John Cena, and a lot of it was nostalgia booking, has suffered. But having a nostalgia match, bro, it killed, right? The match wasn't the greatest thing of all time, but it was 15 minutes and 45 seconds of nostalgia that killed, and it did what it needed to do. I had goosebumps during the entrances. You know, we had, you know, I wish there was a way they could have had Edge and Christian a part of it. Unfortunately, that I think eventually the Hardys, when they retire, will be against Edge and Christian their final match, and I think it will be like an end of an era where all four of them will retire. Maybe the Dudleys come out and participate in that. I think it does happen in WWE. I personally do. But this was a wonderful match, right? Kind of predictable that the Hardys would win, seeing that the titles were on the line and this was a retirement match. But the result doesn't matter. This was just a fun, nostalgic moment for wrestling fans that grew up watching these people, right? And so many people, you know, posting their favorite memories about them. So many people who got into wrestling because of the Hardys and the Dudleys. And not just watching wrestling, but actually got into the business and wanted to be a wrestler because of the teams, right? And then we had Trick and Mike Santana. We all knew Santana was winning. I don't want to really discuss the match. The match was fine. I think involving his daughter was good. It was the emotional pull that you needed for Santana. You know, she slapped Trick. You don't play with the person, you know, like father, like daughter. It was a cool moment seeing her have the belt. And I, however, am of the, and you can disagree with me here, but I am of the opinion this was cooked for too long, right? So let me explain. It hit. It did what it needed to do. But sometimes there's this, it wasn't like they didn't burn the food, right? Let's just use a food analogy here, right? They were cooking, right? And they left it in, and it wasn't burnt. Like, it wasn't bad. It was still edible. But there's that sweet spot where you pull it out, and it's cooked just right. Sometimes you can overcook certain foods, and they're still edible. They still taste good, but it's past its sweet spot. The sweet spot for Mike Santana winning this was in New York at Slammiversary. I'm still 100% convinced that the moment, the energy in Long Island at UBS Arena, like, that place would have exploded if he won. And the moment that they were trying to get the pop that they were trying to get would have been better. Now, I understand that they were trying to carry through No Mercy and carry through into, you know, Bound for Glory and get tickets for Bound for Glory because it's its biggest event. But I still think you could have had Trick involved, maybe with a rematch for Bound for Glory. But I still think Santana should have won at Slammiversary because the moment would have been bigger, right? Like, you had it handed down. Like, there's a slogan that at the end of the day, TNA is just going to TNA, right? That they have the perfect opportunity to do something that could put them big time, and they just sort of fail to hit that, right? And that's what I feel like they did at Slammiversary by keeping the title on Trick. That they had the perfect opportunity, the crowd, the moment, the Boricuas were in the building representing Puerto Rico in New York, where it's a high Boricua population. Like, everything lined up with Santana winning in New York. And what TNA has done is they sort of long build these things to where you think it's going to happen. Oh, no, it's going to be at the next big show, right? So it's not going to happen here at Slammiversary. It's going to happen at Bound for Glory. And we all knew it would happen, right? I think it would, the moment, the pop that you were looking for would have been bigger, would have been better, would have, right, had Mike Santana won the title at Slammiversary. That's just me, right? So that's Bound for Glory. In response to this, right, I got the IWC mad because someone posted something on about a New Japan show that was Saturday morning or whatever. I don't know what time it was. Again, I posted something. Imagine watching this show instead of Bound for, or imagine talking about this show instead of Bound for Glory. Right, kind of trolling, but at the same time, kind of being serious. Right now, and that got the IWC. I went to bed as soon as I posted it. I woke up with like 34 mentions. Most of them taking the easy route that they all make, like, oh, look at you, you're an incel, you're overweight, you blah blah blah, you right? Y'all need to get a little bit more creative if you think that stuff's gonna hurt my feelings. I've heard it all, right? But the point that I was trying to make and I was having with these people was that the casual fan. And again, we got to define casual by those who watch the product for what it is, which is a TV show. Casual isn't, I don't pay attention to the business. Casual is my level of engagement is that of, I understand that the business is for entertainment purposes and that it's not real. And I feel like a lot of these nerds, and I'm going to call them that, nerds in the IWC, think that wrestling's a real sport. and that they have to watch all of it. And that, and the point that I was trying to make in this discussion that I had on X with these insane cult members was that most people that are casual fans of pro wrestling, they don't care about what happens in Japan. I don't care about Zack Sabre Jr. I don't care about Konosuke Take a Shit. I don't care. That's not his name. That's his nickname for me. But Takeshka, I'll be respectful. I don't care about Takeshka, right? Not because I don't think they're great, but because I don't care what happens in Japan. Why is that such a bad thing to say that I don't have all but so much interest in the pro wrestling business as it is, and I found something that I like in NXT and TNA, and that's where I focus my energy watching wrestling, because I don't see wrestling as a sport to where I have to watch all of it. I see wrestling as this is something for me to be entertained by, and I'm only going to watch. They say so often, the IWC, oh, why don't you e-drones just watch what you want to watch and stop complaining about AEW? But when we actually do that, and when we actually say, I'm only going to watch what I want to watch, it's, well, how come you don't know about New Japan? Well, I just told you I only like NXT and TNA. Why would I care about New Japan? Right? And so I just, at the end of the day, the typical casual fan who goes to a show for WWE, they're not going. And again, casual doesn't mean you're not engaged online, doesn't mean that you don't tweet about the show, doesn't mean you don't watch the show. You know, some of the biggest people that WWE puts on as like their reactors, Chiseled Adonis and stuff like that, they're casual fans, right? It's entertainment to them, right? There's a reason you don't see Chiseled Adonis reacting to a New Japan show. It just, right? Because it wouldn't, it doesn't, he probably doesn't know anything about Japanese wrestling. And it, like, it offends the nerds in the IWC when you don't care about Japan. And they make all these excuses about, well, no, America's not the, no. America is 100% understood in the world as the number one entertainment market in the world. I was just having a conversation with a coworker, the artist Youngblood. He had a conversation with Ozzy Osbourne before Ozzy passed. And Ozzy basically told this guy, this recording artist, Youngblood, that the only thing you have left to do is conquer America. Now, why would Ozzy say that? Because in the music business, it doesn't matter if you conquer Europe. You could, there's a reason the Beatles came over to America, right? Like, it is well known within the entertainment business that if you want to make it, you know you made it if you made it with the American crowd. And by the way, I think Youngblood conquered America because his tickets went on sale, I think, last week, and he sold out of all 66 cities in 59 seconds. Just a little tidbit. He has the record for shortest amount of time to sell out an entire tour, to the point to where his booking agency, his record label, may even add more shows. 66 tour stops in a concert tour. I mean, assuming you do shows 3 days a week, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, that's 22 weeks. That's about a little bit over 25% of the year spent on tour. Like, 66 stops is a long tour just for the American leg of the tour. I'm sure he's got a foreign leg of the tour as well, right? And so, but everyone recognizes in the entertainment business that if you want to make it in entertainment, you make it in America. It's why all the big actresses in Europe and actors and actresses in Europe who make it in European film market, they get sent to America to try to make it here, because they know that that's, if you make it in America, you made it in the industry. It's not enough to conquer Europe. You have to conquer America. And so the same is with wrestling. The biggest wrestling promotion in the world is in America, right? The top two, actually, right? And really, if you really want to talk about it, TNA is number three, and they're a North American brand, right? And so the American audience is the most important in the entertainment business, without a doubt. There's no arguing that. And if we're being honest, since the beginning of time of the industry, wrestling has always been considered an entertainment entity. It's an entertainment industry. It's always been that way. Promoters recognize that if I could tell gimmicks, or if I had gimmicks and could tell stories, I would make more money than just putting together two random people in matches. Promoters have recognized that from the beginning of the business and the beginning of the industry. Right? But these people act like Zack Sabre Jr. and Takeshka in a match that, by the way, lasted like 35 minutes. I have an issue. Here's my issue, right? I'm all for like 60-minute classics, but not really. And I'll be honest, I'm not a big fan of the idea of a 60-minute classic. There's only so much you can do in a wrestling match. There's only so much story you can tell in a wrestling match. I personally believe that a good wrestling match should end within about 20 to 25 minutes. That's personally my belief. Anytime you go longer than 20 to 25 minutes, I think you're doing too much. I think it's overbooked at that point. I think a lot of people's attention spans can't focus for that long, and you eventually just start doing the same things over and over and over again as you start to approach longer match times, because there's only so much you can do in a match. I think 20 minutes is that sweet spot for a match, just personally, right? But that match does not, in the grand scheme of wrestling, no one's going to remember that match. No one's going to remember Takeshka won the IWGP world title in 20 years. No one's going to remember that. Maybe Dave Meltzer. But no one else is going to remember that in the grand scheme of wrestling trivia. No one's going to know that answer. No one's going to know that answer, right? And I don't think WWE's doing booking perfect anyway. They're not really creating memorable moments either. Don't hear me critique what's going on in Japan and act like WWE's doing something like good. They're not, right? I'm very consistent with that. WWE's product is the worst I think it's been in 5 years. And I knew that would happen as soon as they killed off the bloodline with Roman Reigns. That was sort of the big story that was really piquing the interest. And when they cut off Roman Reigns and they didn't have him get beaten by a family member so that you can continue the story, because that story has to stay within the family dynamic, right, for it to work. But once you killed heel Roman Reigns off, you lost what a lot of the people who started coming back into wrestling, you lost what they came back for, and you didn't fill it with anything that was good. And wrestling over the last 2 years in WWE, I'm just going to be honest, the booking hasn't been that good. Right? NXT's good. TNA's good. I appreciate that. I watch that. And for these nerds in the IWC, hear me out. If you want to watch Japanese wrestling, by all means, do that. But you shouldn't be upset when casual fans like me, when fans who like wrestling, who watch it, but they really only care about a certain flavor. You shouldn't be upset when I troll and make a joke about, oh, why would I watch this, right? And people are like, oh, well, you're watching the Dudleys versus the Hardys in 2025. Yeah, it's a nostalgic moment. You guys cheer for nostalgia all the time. Don't act like you don't. It's crazy. The IWC is crazy. But with that, let's transition over into football. Let's talk about week six. The NFL this year is very interesting. There's a content creator. Why can't I think of her name? Is it Annie or Anna? I think it's Annie Agar. Yeah, Annie Agar, one of my favorite content creators, like, from the ground up, you know, it wasn't one that was sort of like, you could tell when there were, like, people who were sort of like industry plants who they try to make seem grassroots. Annie is grassroots. Straight from TikTok, like, from her beginning of TikTok days. Like, perfect. Like, I love her content. And she said something in her week six review that I actually think is true. We don't know who's good and who's bad. We really don't. That the league is very interesting this year. But with that said, I guess we could start on Thursday. The Giants beat the Eagles, which isn't surprising to me. I predicted that, by the way. That would happen. I predicted that the Eagles would struggle this year, and they are. And it's not. And it's yes. It's an. I don't want to go into it. I don't really care about the Eagles. I don't pay attention to it. Is it an offensive coordinator issue? Sure, probably. That's part of it. But I also think it's an issue where, as much as Jalen Hurts is very good, I think he's a great leader. I don't think he's a good quarterback. I think when you capitulate everything that is a quarterback, like what makes a great quarterback, leadership, calm. I think he's an A plus in a lot of those categories. But when it comes to physically playing the game and playing the position, I just don't think he's sufficient at that. And he relies on, and for whatever reason, they're not running the football. They can't run the ball. The offensive line is injured, right? And you get exposed by the Giants. And I knew pretty early in the season that the Giants would win this game. I kind of predicted it because it just seemed and made the most sense that, I mean, the Eagles were going to be exposed. And I kind of figured it would happen. I mean, this Eagles team is 4-2, and they could easily be 1-5, 2-4. Right? Easily. No other game. I'm going to talk about the Patriots here in a second, but no other game really stood out to me. That England game was awful. Can we stop sending the Jets to go play games overseas? That's the worst, right? I'm not even kidding. This is an actual stat. The Queen of England, who, for those who don't know, has been dead for like 18 months. The Queen of England had more net passing yards than Justin Fields. Justin Fields ended the game with like negative 46 passing yards. The Jets ended with like under 100 yards of offense in the entire game. And really, they had a chance to win all the way until the last sack. Denver's defense is scary, but I don't know about that offense. Right? And then the last thing to talk about. Everyone said We Too Deep was crazy. They were going to transition into Patriots Corner here with this. We Too Deep, you're crazy with your predictions. When I said that the Patriots were making the playoffs, when I said that there was a potentiality that the Patriots win the AFC East, everyone called me crazy. Lo and behold, we're 6 weeks in. The Patriots are 4-2. They're sitting tied, but really in first place because of the tiebreaker of the AFC East. They're sitting in the 4 seed right now. By the way, in a AFC right now that's led by the Colts, the Chargers, the Patriots, and the Steelers. I don't know if we went back to 2005 instead of 2025, but I mean this is reminiscent of Brady and Roethlisberger and Rivers and Peyton Manning, right? Y'all told me I was crazy when I said Drake May was going to go off this year. Y'all told me I was crazy. Like, the Patriots are 4-2. And so we'll transition into Patriots Corner. We're going to talk about this game with the Saints. But I want to finish this thought real quick. Patriots are 4-2. And with remaining games, Titans this week, Browns at home next week, Falcons at home the week after that. Right, so theoretically, that should be three more wins. So we're 7-2 going into travel to Tampa against the Buccaneers, which I think that'll be a loss. I genuinely do believe that'll be a loss. So that puts us at 7-3. We have the Jets. So that's 8-3. Bengals, 9-3. Giants, I think that's a trap game Monday night at home. I think the Giants beat us. So 9-4. Bye week. Bills off the bye at home. I think we could win that. 10-4. Ravens in Baltimore, but the Ravens aren't good, but I don't know how healthy they'll be at this point. Let's say we win that. What is that? 10-4. Excuse me. 11-4. My apologies. 11-4. Jets 12-4. Dolphins 13. Theoretically, I think the best that the Patriots will go, realistically, they're going to end 13-4. Realistically. Does that mean they're 13-4 on paper? A lot of it has to do with schedule. We have the easiest remaining schedule in the league. With a strength of schedule of and how strength of schedule is determined is the win percentage of your remaining opponents. And we have a strength of schedule right now of 30%, meaning right now if you combine the records of our remaining opponents, only 30% of the games have been won, right? And if you take out the Bills and you take out the Buccaneers, it's practically a zero at that point, right? Because, I mean, 9 wins come straight from the Buccaneers and the Bills right now. So, the Patriots have the easiest remaining schedule with a top-tier offense right now. And so, let's talk about this offense. What does the scoreboard show that the Patriots, you know, demolished the Saints? No, it doesn't. But this was a near-perfect game, right? This is the style of football that Patriots fans are used to, right? Defense played pretty good, right? Now, look, we're sloppy on penalties. We get penalized like 10 penalties a game, right? But we clean that up. We're unstoppable, in my opinion. But we have, you know, if it's not Stephon Diggs going off, it's Kayshon Booty. You know, Ramondre, if he can hold the ball, he's really good. Travion's getting cooking, right? Drake May is insane. We got the tight ends going. The defense is going, right? Milton Williams played a game with 101 degree fever. Took some, got an IV before the game and went through and played pretty damn well, right? This Patriots team has a new culture, has a new a grit to it that Vrabel brings, and it's something we haven't seen in a while, like early Belichick days with Brady, right? It's a culture, and I forgot who I was watching. There was a video I was watching. I don't remember who it was. Oh, it was Drew Bledsoe. He was talking about he got drafted number one overall to the Patriots in the later 90s. And at that point, the Patriots were like the laughing stock of the league. And he was talking about, like, I was drafted to change culture. And you brought in Kraft, bought the team, and he changed the culture. And Belichick was hired, and he changed the culture. And Tommy was drafted, and Brady changed the culture. And you bring in guys whose entire job was to change the culture. And sometimes it's not having the best roster. Sometimes it's about having a group of guys who buy in to the culture. And unfortunately, Bledsoe didn't get the fruit of the changing of the culture. But changing culture is hard. If you've ever been a part of a team at any point, whether it's at work, at school, you know, as an actual in athletics, if you've never, if you've ever been a part of a team, when the culture is bad, like, it's really hard to change that. And Vrabel has changed the culture. Drake May holds that standard. Like, you know, I listened to Stephon Diggs the other day being mic'd up by the Patriots, and like, he's becoming a culture changer. What is what he does off the field distracting? Sure. But in the locker room, in the huddle, the Stephon Diggs is a culture changer, right? He's keeping people encouraged. He's hyping them up, right? And that's what you want in your team. We have a culture that we have a team that's gritty, that's physical, that has a positive culture. We're winning, right? We've already matched the last two or three seasons' win total in 6 weeks, and is bound to. I think at least get 10 wins by the end of the season. If not, like, I theoretically, like, I don't see a way the Patriots win less than 12 games. Just being realistic, right? The schedule is way too easy for us to, unless something dramatically changes in how this team plays football over the next 11 weeks, I just don't see a way that this team just completely collapses. So, the Patriots are here, man. I'm not going to sit here and say we're back, but we're back, right? I don't think we're the greatest team in the NFL right now. I actually think that is the Buccaneers. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I do think that that's the Buccaneers. But with that said, let's go into my top five teams of week six, and we'll start at number five with the team I just spent a couple minutes talking about, and that is the New England Patriots. Just for everything I just said, right? I don't think we played the best game of the week, but we played a damn near perfect game, and we performed to the level that we needed to win the game. And number four is the Falcons. I mean, this is a team that, sure, they were at home, but in prime time, right? In prime time, the Buffalo Bills come in, they're supposed to beat you, and you just dominate. I'm starting to wonder if the Bills just choke in primetime. But the Falcons played a good game. Bijan was all on it, right? And Penix did just enough to win the game. There was a couple bad throws in that game, though. I gotta be honest with you. Penix is forcing some of these throws that should have been intercepted. But the Falcons played a very good football game. The Buccaneers are number three. I don't think they played the best. I think the Buccaneers are the best team in the league cumulatively through the 6 weeks. But I don't think they played the best game this week. They played the 49ers. Now, someone like Kara, who, hey, she's an OG of the show. I respect her opinion. She'll come in and say, well, the 49ers are injured. And that's fine. If Baker wasn't throwing to his number four receiver, Godwin not in the game. Evans not in the game. Abuka gets hurt in the game. You're throwing to what the hell is their tight end? K. Dotton and to fourth string and worse receivers, right? The Buccaneers have injury issues of their own. And Baker's bacon. He's cooking right now, bro. And this team is dominant. And I don't know. It's hard to say that they're better than the Lions. We'll find out this week because the Buccaneers play the Lions this week. My number two team of week six is the Giants. You come in, you dominate the Eagles. Scataboo, Jackson Dart, you know, a lot of people critique them because of the headbutts and you know, oh, they play like they want CTE. But, bro, that's the type of football that I like to see. It's Cam Scataboo get, like, when I see him run the football, right, I love seeing it, right? And my number one team of the week are the Kansas City Chiefs. And I'm just going to be completely honest with you. They're getting Rashee Rice back this week. They're starting to get hot. I think Kansas City's coming back, and they're gonna make a push towards winning some of these games remaining on their schedule. And it's gonna be something where I think Kansas City's on their way back, right? Rashee Rice is coming back. think Xavier Worley's finally healthy, right? They got weapons now. They got Rashee Rice. They got Xavier Worley. They got Pacheco. They got Hollywood Brown, right? They got some weapons. Travis Kelce, Mahomes, right? They got some guys. And so the Chiefs are my number one team of the week this week. And going forward, I would look out for the Chiefs to dominate, right? And start winning some of these ball games. With that being said, let's go into our predictions for week number 7. We start Thursday night, Pittsburgh Steelers and the Bengals. I'm going to go Pittsburgh. We have Jacksonville's playing overseas game against the Rams. I don't know where they're playing, but it's interesting. We're going to go with the Rams. Saints in Chicago. We'll go Bears. We'll go Browns over Dolphins. We're going to go Patriots over Titans. Chiefs over Raiders. Eagles over Vikings. Panthers over Jets. Giants over the Broncos. Colts over the Chargers. Commanders over the Cowboys. Packers over the Cardinals. Sunday Night Football. Niners, Falcons. I'm going to pull one here, and I'm going to say the Falcons. I'm going to pick the Falcons here. Monday Night Football. Two doubleheader again, because that's stupid. First game is Buccaneers playing the Lions. I'm picking the Bucs. I think the Buccaneers are... This is going to determine who I think the best team in football is. I think it's going to be a great game, and I'm going to probably tune in to watch this. Buccaneers, I'm picking to win, and then Texans, Seahawks as well on Monday night, and we're going to go ahead and pick the Seahawks. So let's end this thing with some questions from the Discord. First one's from Kara. All 32 teams are representation / mascots come alive and had a brawl. Who wins the brawl? So, first off, there's only 28 mascots. So, the Giants, Jets, Chargers, and I forgot the other team that doesn't have a mascot. Packers, I think. Yeah, Packers, Chargers, Giants, Jets, they automatically get eliminated. I'm not going to go through all of the mascots, but there's an obvious answer to this. The Savage one up there in Indianapolis. Blue. Blue Savage, bro. Ain't no one beating that man. Blue is winning this one. We're going to save the deep thought one that she asked for the end, because I want to end the show with that one. B-Master asked, DX, NWO, the Bloodline, and Evolution. You have to keep one and erase the rest from history. So I'll say this, erase DX, erase the NWO. My two favorite factions of all time is Evolution and the Bloodline. And then third would be the Four Horsemen, right? Evolution was good, but I'm going to pick the Bloodline. We're keeping the Bloodline, and here's why. The Bloodline... But no, Evolution told some good stories too. But I think the Bloodline reached a market in the marketplace. Like, it elevated the game. It carried the company. It literally carried the company. And I think WWE at the time of Evolution had a lot going for it in terms of it just had a... Like, if Evolution disappeared, you had talent that could carry the show. And everyone knew that when Roman Reigns stepped off TV, the product was going to suffer a little bit. And then when Roman came back, the product did really good, right? And the Bloodline for 4 years made WWE about as mainstream as any other entertainment company. And so for that reason, I think I'm going to keep the Bloodline. Kara, I don't know if this was a question or more of a statement, but she said, after last night, I have to say, why are kids who play Madden better at the 2-minute drill than some of these teams? And I mean, I'll agree with the statement. I don't have an answer to the question, but I do agree that there is an issue with some of these coaches not understanding 2-minute drills. But what I really want to end with is this. Carrie got some questions that make you think, and I like this one. So the question is, would you press a button that saves one person that you love but kills 10 strangers And then the second question, follow up, do the ends ever justify the means? So this is the classical, what is known in psychology as the trolley scenario, right? And essentially the trolley scenario is you have a trolley on, or a train on a train track. You have one person on one side. So with trains, you know, you have levers that turn the train. You turn one way, it's at a fork, right? You turn one way and you kill someone you love. You turn them the other way and you kill 10 other people, right? It's that classic trolley scenario, right? And depending on your world, because I do think ultimately this is a worldview question. And so for me, my answer is this. I'm saving my loved one. And here's why. So some people answer, well, I'm saving the 10 because it's losing one is a greater loss of life. Or excuse me, a lesser loss of life. And what is good in the world is to save as much life as possible. And I would, my worldview actually is different than that. My worldview states that we were created with a hierarchy of importance within relationships. And so, with that being said, it's God. If you're married, it's God's spouse, children, parents, community. And then even within that level, it's your next door neighbor, your city, your state, your country, the rest of the world, right? So for example, the idea of, is it okay to be a nationalist? And I think it's okay to be a nationalist because in terms of the hierarchy of importance, it's more important to me to protect my country than to protect some other random country in the Middle East or in Europe or anything like that, right? And so that should be more important to us, right? But if the question then is, do I protect do I, you know, me living on the East Coast of North Carolina, would I rather save North Carolina or would I rather save California? And the answer should be I would rather save North Carolina because that directly is my proximity, right? But I should love the people of Charlotte, North Carolina more than I love the people of Wilmington, North Carolina because it's my, right? But then even deeper within the city of Charlotte, I should love my friends and my parents and my siblings who, right? And if I was married, I would love my spouse more than anyone, right? Other, right? And ultimately, my allegiance is to my loved one here, right? I don't know the 10 strangers. I have no actual allegiance or moral reason to actually save them, right? And if it was ultimately, if there was a way to save all 11 lives, then you would do that, right? I think morally, if there was a way in which I could save all lives, then by not doing that, I think that's a moral evil. If I say, well, I'm going to save my family first, my loved one first, right, which I do, then what happens is, oh, well, now there's a way I could save the other 10, and I decide not to, that's morally evil. But if the situation has this cause, I have to push a button and that saves, you know, let's say it's blue button to save the 10 strangers, red button to save my loved one. I could only push one because of the way I believe we were. Now, I'm taking loved one to be like close friends, family, you know, significant other, spouse or something like that, right? And so I would say because of the hierarchy of importance of that relationship, that you have a moral responsibility to care for your wife or your husband, if you're married, over anyone else. That includes your children, by the way. Right? Because you again, this is backwards to American understanding, where we baby the children, and the children are the most important thing in the household, but you don't make a covenant with your children. You made a covenant with your spouse, right? And so your spouse, in my worldview, your spouse is the closest thing in relationship. So it's God at the top. The next tier down is your significant other, your spouse, husband or wife, right? Then it comes your kids. Then it comes your community, right? And you see what I'm saying? Friends. And so if it's a loved one over 10 strangers who I don't, if it's an either or situation where it's not an and, where I can save all lives. If I could save all lives, morally you would have to save all lives if you had the opportunity. But because this is an either or question, I would save the one that I had a moral responsibility to protect, which is my loved one. Right. And that's sort of how my worldview looks at that. Does the end justify the means? To answer that question, it's going to sound a little harsh. It doesn't matter if the end justifies the mean or not. The command of, and again, this is a command of, you know, my worldview would take this, the Christian worldview would take this from the scriptures, and that what God wrote there is more important than whether or not the ends justify the means. Again, I think if I decided, you know, I'm going to save my loved one, but I'm just going to let the other 10 die even though I have an opportunity to save them, that's morally evil, by the way. But because this is an either or, my worldview says save the one that is of more importance, a more important relationship, which would be my loved one. 100%. 100%. All right, well, that's the Slapping Meat Community Show. Thank you all for listening. All the links of the stuff I mentioned at the beginning is in the description. Join the Discord. Like, share, subscribe. That's very important, by the way. Like, share, subscribe. Follow. If you're listening on audio, I really, like, it would be very important. If I joke about this, but, like, the ratings on these websites are very important in getting us in the algorithms. And so leaving a review on Apple, leaving a review on Spotify, whatever you're listening on is very important. You don't have to leave any comments. Just hit 5 stars or 4 stars or whatever you think the show deserves. That is very, very important. And so... with that, I am Way Too Deep. Thank you for listening, and until the next episode, I will see y'all later. Have a great rest of your week, and don't forget to keep calm. Slap that meat. So hit that and subscribe. Come along for the ride, whether it's NXT or NFL time. Going in the ropes and forth and deep. Slap the Meat Community every Tuesday.